In Goal magazine is our weekly chat discussing the goaltending position, certain different players and everything else. Woodley, welcome back to the show, my man. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Little interlude, quick chat with you, and then figure out why the hell the Canucks traded Hunter Shinkarak for Marcus Granlund. So it's a busy day. It's a good day.
Two young guys who both expect. Well, I honestly understand why the Canucks did it. I totally get it. But we'll see what happens. Now, Cam Ward was on the market earlier this year, no takers. Now he's on a real hot streak for Carolina. But you're cautious to think that this likely won't last. Why?
Yeah, probably for the same reason that, I know that his name was floated to a couple teams. I talked to a couple goalie coaches that had their management group run his name by them. And their response probably is indicative of kind of why he's capable of being great, but why it typically tends not to last. And that's just, there is a real lack of, for lack of a better term, modernization of his game over the past 10 years. He is a goalie that relies so much on timing, rhythm, and feel. I mean, when you break down his game technically, it's not pretty. It's not efficient. It's not what you teach today. And I don't blame this entirely on him. I think you could make the statement safely, and it would take a little bit of, maybe take a little work to really back it up, but I know others that have expressed this as well, that the Carolina Hurricanes ruined one of Canada's truly great goaltending, like potentially one of our great goaltenders in Canada over the past decade. And so the skill, the hands, the skating, the ability, the raw tools are still there. He's not that old. They just haven't been refined at any point over the last decade. And so those skills allow you to go on runs like this, especially behind a pretty good young defense that makes big mistakes and asks you to make big saves after dominating possession for long periods, but overall a good team. So he's got that capability, and yet when you watch him play, you see the inefficiencies and you see that sort of lack of a technical foundation that we equate that quite often leads to consistency. And so you're not surprised both that he still is able to have these highs, but you're always worried that the lows are coming because there just is such a pure reliance on that skill. And, it's kind of sad. It is partially on the Hurricanes. They really did nothing in terms of having a goaltending coach there after he won a cup that was really capable of modernizing Cam Ward's game. I mean, literally for most of a decade. They've got David Marcoux there now. There's been a few refinements on post play and stuff, but he still plays such an outside-in flow game, straight back to the post, loses angle a lot when he retreats, and so is vulnerable kind of upstairs and far side. Frankly, if you really break it down on tape, he moves out of the way of pucks a lot, and that's just kind of a lot of old-school habits that have never been refined. And Cam takes a little blame himself, too. I mean, the goalie coach and the goalie school that he worked with that helped him get to being a Conn Smythe winner in his rookie season, he stopped working with after winning the Cup. So there was some complacency there on his part, and there wasn't a lot of good help or good push from the Hurricanes for just way, way too long.
Kevin Woodley joins us. Kevin, Peter Mrazek was unbelievable, right? A lot of people have him in the conversation, although I don't think he's better than Holtby this season, but he's been great. Now, his last few games, the Wings suddenly are leaking. He's a young goalie. I'm sure people see more tape on him. Are there any tendencies you've noticed that teams are exploiting, or is it just a short little drop for Mrazek maybe coming back to earth somewhat?
Well, you know what? There's some similarities there. I mean, he's got a more modern game than Cam Ward, for sure, but he plays again on the outside edges of aggression and relies on reflexes heavily to make up for it. And so, anytime, and that's why I agree, he's fully deserving of being in that conversation, for the Vezina Trophy. And it's interesting to see how that discussion will shift, because we've seen Holtby's numbers kind of come back down to earth into kind of that middle top 10 pack as opposed to, at the top of the league lately. But yeah, much like Ward, there's, when you watch his game, when you watch how reliant he is on the athleticism, on the reactive saves, generally speaking, that's not sustainable over a long stretch. And Mrazek's ability at a young age to sustain it for this long is impressive. And I'm not saying he can't continue to be a guy who is in that conversation. But when you look at it, when you really break down the tape on him, you should be asking the same questions. Again, not to the extent of Ward, but you should be asking similar questions of Mrazek because there's such a reliance on skill. Listen, you need that skill to be in the upper tier of goaltenders in the NHL. Being in position, being technically sound, isn't enough anymore. Every time we talk about equipment or I hear the talking heads on television talk about equipment, they say we need more athletic saves. We need to get rid of the blocking goaltenders. You know what the truth is? And I get this every time I hear that. I get texts from guys around the league saying, what blocking goaltenders? There aren't any. If you're a blocking goaltender, you can't play in the league. But being sound positionally, sound technically, in a position that, you know, maybe when those reflexes aren't at 100% every night, you're at least there to have it hit you or to put yourself in the way of it more often. That's where you get your consistency. The guys that rely heavily on that athleticism, and we've seen that from Mrazek, he puts himself in positions where he has to get desperate, where he has to be incredible with his movement from right to left because he doesn't rotate properly on post save. He goes into goalie 9-1-1 early and gets desperate. When you see that enough, that should lead you to question marks. That should lead you to wonder whether it's sustainable long term. And, you know, we're short in his career. And as much as the potential is there, and the mindset for him too, there seems to be an unflappability. He doesn't seem to get bothered by things, and that counts. But it doesn't mean you ignore the fact he needs to look spectacular to make so many of these saves. And you wonder if that's sustainable, no question.
So, Kevin Woodley joins us from NHL.com and In Goal Magazine. What's the concerns as to why? Because they just can't be that athletic, or eventually teams will pick up on it? What does he need to, I guess, bring into his game as he evolves and matures as a goalie?
Well, I mean, in terms of teams picking up on it, what you tend to see, and again, I'll go back to Ward because there are some similarities in terms of where they play on the ice, is if you watch a guy enough, and you see that he's aggressive to the point of outside of the paint, you're going to start to look to pass around. I mean, it's no secret. When teams go in and play the Carolina Hurricanes and Cam's in net, the scouting report is pretty simple. I mean, don't waste shots at him unless you can come down the wing and get him to again, give up that angle the way he does, lose angle the way he does. But for the most part, you're going to try and pass it around him. Again, simple formula. If a guy's way out there, and you're able to move the puck laterally against his team, that's a lot of distance he has to recover. The fact he also doesn't do it efficiently, and in Mrazek's case, when he tracks laterally, he comes over his shoulder, he opens up, and he comes across flat. He doesn't gain angle. He doesn't put himself square as he moves from side to side and around his crease. So it just puts himself in a position where he has to reach a lot more. Breaking it down from the other team, like I said, that's how you do it. In terms of why you worry about it, it's just not if I watch two goalies having similar results and one guy is putting himself in a position where he's set and he's square on most shots and the other guy looks spectacular and he's the guy that gets branded as athletic, generally speaking, when you break it down and start to rewind that footage, why is the one guy set and square and why is the other guy reaching and chasing? There's a reason for it, whether it's positioning, whether it's a kind of a lack of technical base. And I'm taking the guy that's in position every time in terms of long-term success. If I put myself in a position where the puck has to go through me, it doesn't go through my chest, but I can sure miss with a reaching glove or a reaching blocker. And that's where, again, you worry about the consistency and the sustainability of the guys who are reaching more often than the other ones.
Kevin Woodley joins us. Kevin, did you see the Corey Hirsch piece?
I did. For some reason, I thought that came out after our last discussion. You probably can guess where I stand on this one.
Well, no, I'm curious. What do you think?
Two parts. One, excellent job. I think Corey did a great job. I think there's no question there was some consultation with Kay Whitmore in the National Hockey League there because there were some ideas in there that we discussed. My fear is he made it look too easy, and there are elements that he said we're safe that a lot of guys truly don't believe are and went a little too far in those cases. And if he really believes it's safe and if the NHL believes it's safe on some of them, then the NHL goalies, the guys who have to stop the pucks, need to see it. They need to see testing with NHL-level shots before you put them in it. And some of the areas where, I'll give you an example, the shoulder flaps. The idea is to start to wrap that and protect it better. But just removing, you know, the magic eraser they had, and it was great special effects, and it was well done by Corey, and he hit a lot of great areas. But if you take that magic marker on those shoulder flaps, and there is actually a body behind it instead of just equipment hanging on air, you would have seen parts of upper arms. Luongo had a fracture in his shoulder last year in a similar spot. So I know where they're going with it. They want a shoulder cap type system. They want to wrap it around. What companies have been able to do is say, okay, well, we've got a little exposure here on the arm. We need to put a flap out in front of it instead of wrapping it around the body. And they've just gotten wider and wider, and they've been able to make it take up more space. And I fully agree you have to change that. But just removing that flap isn't enough. You need to kind of change how the arms and the shoulder areas are designed on the equipment. The height, the width of the leg pads, great idea. Frankly, one that I had last year and have shared with people at the league. You can get down to 10 inches. You can remove that outer rule. The height of the pads becomes an issue. As Corey said, it shouldn't be an issue to have exposed knees because, hey, look at these great knee pads. And as he said, they were monstrous. Well, I promptly got a text from a guy in the AHL saying, yeah, those are great knee pads. I shattered a kneecap in the exact same ones. So you're not, you know, it takes a different level of protection to expose bare knees. That's where I worry about the height thing. Needs to be tested. They're probably going to end up needing bigger knee pads to make that safe. Pants, absolutely. The second part I worry about with this. So there are a lot of good ideas to move this discussion forward. But the other part I worry about is, A, he went beyond the NHL's mandate. So if people think that that's what's coming for next year, they need to take a step back because that's not what's coming. Because he went beyond the mandate because it went beyond what they think right now is safe. Part two is, as great as that looked, you don't get to take, you know, a magic marker on the green screen or whatever they did and change the manufacturing process. This takes time and a lot of money from the manufacturing. And unless the NHL is stepping in, getting involved and being a part of that manufacturing process to make these prototypes, to show them how it's done and how they can use materials to make this safe, or unless they're willing to give back some of the funding that they demand to have locos on gear in the NHL, and I don't see either one of those things happening, this is not a next year process. Because the goalies I talk to are saying, if we have to wear this stuff for next year, we need equipment ready by July. And we're just not there yet. So they'll have the chest and arm smaller, they'll have the pants smaller, they'll have better sizing charts, but to take the next steps that Corey talked about, you're looking at another year. I love that he opened the discussion, and I think it's going to help push things forward and continue this push towards smaller gear. It's just, A, not as easy as he made it look, and frankly, it's not as safe necessarily as he made it sound, and you're going to need to do proper testing before you go as extreme as he did in a couple of areas, the shoulders for sure, and the knees absolutely.
One that intrigued me, only because I hadn't heard it discussed before, and definitely is not a safety issue, is the length of the goal stick.
Yeah, I mean, hey, weird one. I don't know how much of a difference it really makes.
Fair enough.
I really don't. I mean, we're not in an era with a lot of stick saves. The better goalies at least are steering pucks with their sticks rather than just kicking it out off their pads. But they're not steering it with their sticks with nothing behind it. If they miss with the sticks, the pad is there. If anything covers the five hole, more times than not, it's in a paddle down situation where it's the paddle and not the length of the blade that's really affecting that. But hey, outside the box idea, like good ideas that need to at least warrant discussion. You know, he's right about the saves off the knob of the stick, as silly as it sounds, two or three times a game for me, you know, and if that's one that goes in instead of hitting the knob or the end of the stick, then that's another goal. The other one I do have concern with, though, is the cuff of the glove. The cheater was the stupidest word ever, but when they tested a glove without the cheater on it in 2005 at the NHL-NHLPA meetings, the lack of protection there, the thumb was being bent back to the point where they were worried about broken thumbs and injuries. Now, I've talked to manufacturers. They think the production and the materials used have improved to the point where they can certainly cut down on the cuff of the glove and that cheater area. The one thing you worry about a little bit is as the hand turns to different catching positions and the cuff moves away from the wrist is a really exposed area for goalies. And so if you do expose that to deflected pucks, that gets real dangerous in a hurry. But certainly there's another discussion point. But you know what? Here's another one. Let me throw you this. We're having this great discussion, and it's a good discussion, and it needed to happen. And I applaud Corey for spurring it forward. I just hope everyone that jumped on it isn't going to expect these things to happen overnight. But then I had a great chat with Francois Allaire yesterday, longtime Colorado Avalanche goaltending coach, with the Montreal Canadiens, the guy who invented the butterfly with Waugh. And we started
screw
talking
him.
About the
poke. He invented the butterfly. Screw him.
Well, okay, there you go. And you can't put that horse back in the barn, so there you go. But we started talking about goalposts, and he started demonstrating to me the different angled net that he started discussing in 2003 and that he built a prototype of for the league to look at in 2003. And how, you know, just by making this simple change, you know, how many of these shots are going to, you know, go barring in. You know, I did a little demonstration for, you know, the percentage of the post you could actually hit with these shots and have it end up going in versus right now. And it was really an interesting discussion as that I then watched the Avalanche hit two posts and looking slowly at the replays, both of which probably go in with his nets. And in this cry for more offense, as we work towards these drastic changes on goaltending equipment and talk about how we can change systems and how can we coax and go to 3-on-3 in overtime, why is that simple change not made? I don't understand. And talking to him, it was kind of hard not to. I mean, here's one of the greatest goaltending, probably the first goaltending coach in the Hall of Fame. And 12 years ago, he presented them with an idea that would increase offense without having to change anything else in the game. The net's not bigger. You're not changing the type of scoring chances. You got a whole generation of shooters that know they have to beat goalies around the edges. Well, this gives them 2 more inches around the edges, and when you add up those 2 inches, I didn't do the math, but this, according to him, 4 feet up each side and 6 feet across, you add 2, you know, Corey's talking about percentages, change the post, and you just added 2 square feet of net where the puck goes in instead of bouncing out, post and out versus post and in. You know, in 12 years they've been sitting on that. And obviously, maybe there's a real genuine safety concern, but when you talk to Frankie, it's like, yeah, why not? Why haven't we made that simple change that doesn't alter anything else in the game, just the shape of the posts, and have more pucks end up in the net?
Well, it's definitely something to consider. I have no problem with it. That's something that, you know, I would hope wouldn't be a major manufacturing issue for the NHL to do. And
well, I mean, that making that change from a manufacturing position versus what they're asking 5 different companies to try and get on the same page with, all of which have different manufacturing processes and materials and proprietary rights. Some of the carbon fiber blends that Corey talked about in some cases are proprietary. So probably a lot simpler to make that manufacturing change than it is the ones they're asking the goalie companies to snap their fingers on and have ready to go by next season.
Kevin, always great stuff, man. We'll talk to you again next Monday.
My pleasure, Jason. Thanks.
Kevin Woodley from InGoal Magazine and NHL.com.